Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Who's ready to go back to high school? The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for the series finale, episode 310, Cheat the Gallows, is sponsored by Vegan Egg. At least we know which one came first.
For those listening, Pete, around the time this comes out, as opposed to at some point in the future, or if you take your podcast player back in time listening in the past, I don't know. Happy 2020. Pete, a little irony here. We're actually technically recording this in the waning moments of 2019. We are time traveling too. We are speaking to the future from the past. We have Chase era. Well, I have a Chase era beard. You have an Alex of the future soul patch. And Pete, I want to say,
but no aside, pencil thin DB beard like evil Alex.
Pete, I will say this, this being our coverage of the final episode of Runaways, I will say no snark, no irony, no joke. I can't wait to dig into the greatest episode of Runaways in these 33 episodes. So with that, Pete, give us your rundown.
Data log, June 14th, 2028. A physically and emotionally scarred Chase is preparing to go back in time to save Gert. His watch beeps, and he's pulled into blue light. In 2022, photos of Carolina and not Nico, aka Julie, are visible, as well as a schedule of summer classes at UCLA. It's a three-year anniversary of some sort, not theirs, we learn, but rather that of Gert's death. Carolina has pledged, along with the other runaways, to move on and lead normal lives. Julie is no psych major like Carolina, but she thinks there's a little denial going on there. Now, Atlas Academy Molly is guiding the cheer team as she prepares to graduate. She's still living at the hostel with old Lace and bearded Chase, but he's locked away in his lab and too busy, as usual, working on quantum entanglement. Dale and Stacy are on an expedition in Honduras, and his father hasn't dropped off some important package. At Wilder Innovators, a soul-patched Alex is giving an interview about all the good he's done for his community to bring it into the future. But questions remain about his father's criminal past, mother's death, and colorful foray into being a teen fugitive. But Chase ends the interview when he calls because he needs help treating the qubits with microwave pulses courtesy specs from the abstract in Alex's office. Nico is meditating and levitating. She's ditched the goth look and goes to reach out on her phone when there's a knock at the door. It's Alex, who knew she'd be there despite not telling anyone she was coming back, who raises a futuristic gun and fires. After the title card, Nico stopped the future bullet Kylo Ren style, having leveled up without the Staff of One. So has future Chase, who explains that Alex is from the future as well and there to kill them all. She has studied with a magical master, and Chase's scar came from someone named Victor, but not his father. They need to gather the others, which is what Nico was about to do anyway. Future Chase reveals to the group future Alex is the person he becomes, but you can't interact with your past or future selves because it can mess too much up. Evil Alex only wants to kill them because one of them set off a bomb in his office, the same way Molly's parents were killed. Over time, some of them follow in their parents' evil footsteps, but Chase can't say who or create a shift in the timeline. Nico wants to quarantine Alex in a spell, like a tropical paradise or that new Star Wars hotel. Evil, pencil-thin beard, Alex, will go after others they care about, like Julie, who he pulls a gun on and knocks out to lure Carolina home, but Nico chokes him out with magic. Chase wants to know where his time watch is, but Alex has hidden it and jumps away. Julie comes to and is confused by awkwardly meeting Nico and the others. Present Alex enters, and Nico learns Julie is Carolina's girlfriend after she left without telling anyone where she was going. Carolina assures Julie she's committed to her now, and they'll take a Disney cruise when this is all over. Hooray, corporate synergy. Chase has discovered Alex went back to the day before they discovered their parents in the basement, when the runaways were their weakest. He gives them all personal time machines to go back. They jump to Atlas, where Chase explains if you touch someone or something, when a time machine activates, it goes with you. They also have enough power for 4 jumps each. He's down to 2, and so is Evil Alex. And he'll need 1 to return to his original timeline. The plan: find and guard yourself while trying not to change anything that happened by interacting with yourself. Get Evil Alex and get out. Future Chase watches his past self sweat Carolina. His teammates won't tell Eiffel. Carolina sees Gert comfort her after yet another mean-spirited prank about her religion. Young Molly needs Gert to put in a word with Eiffel for her dance squad tryout, as seen by future Molly. Evil Alex brandishes a blue blade as his youngest self needs help with AV club equipment, as young Nico ignores him. Alex and Nico move to cut Evil Alex off as Chase follows himself and steps up to stop Gert from being bullied. He looks different because he was auditioning for Pirates of Penance. She notices his scar. Just then, he sees Evil Alex being chased by Nico and Alex and joins in. Evil Alex gets grabbed by a teacher to go on the bus for the ethical hacking class trip. They leave their Alex behind and board the bus to confront Evil Alex. When past Alex shows up, Evil Alex takes a hostage with his glowing blue blade, who can't die before Hillary is elected. Should they tell him? Evil Alex says Chase is the villain, not him, and they should ask him about the scar before Nico uses the mind wipe spell on the whole bus. In the gym, Alex confronts himself, who says he'll do whatever it takes to win. But Evil Alex hasn't done anything yet. Nico still wants to quarantine Alex. Chase wants him to jump back to avoid contact with himself, who he vows not to become. They say goodbye. Nico confesses she left because she had the power to prevent suffering and death, but didn't know how to use it. Chase gets ready to leave the rest of the group, their mission completed, but they want to go with him and save Gert. They time jump into the hostel the night of Gert's death. Morgan's on her way. They can't disrupt any of it. They just need to keep Gert safe. But who will complete the salt circle? Chase will. Evil Alex takes off, spotted by Dale and Stacy, but the runaways can't risk revealing themselves. Chase had no choice but to bring Evil Alex with them, since he didn't have enough jumps left. Nico and Carolina catch a conversation between their past selves. Past Chase finds the box with the whiz phone Corvus in it. Future Nico breaks a bunch of rules and speaks to herself, counseling her to stay and fight. She touches herself and disappears. Morgan arrives and the fight progresses as before. Chase takes the fisticons from his past self and knocks him out. Nico and Molly see Evil Alex up to something, and Molly is on it. Gert goes to get the salt from Tina and immediately recognizes Pirates of Penance Chase, who takes the salt instead. He monologues this time using a device on his ankle to complete the circle. Evil Alex points out future Nico before Molly knocks him out. Morgan realizes this isn't Tina. Gert comes out and Morgan throws her into a wall and then sends glass shards through future Chase. Looks like the pathetic children win again. Gert has survived and says goodbye to Chase with everyone else, including present Chase. High five for time travel. But the future versions are gradually erased. Sorceress apocalypse averted. The runaways prepare to go for breakfast. But beneath Alex's wallet, he finds a note that reads, 1, infiltrate Wilder Innovators. 2, hide Mancha. 3, kill Nico, underlined, that he didn't write. And they head into cancellation.
Pete, one more time here. Let's look at the baddies of Runaways. Let's start with Evil Alex.
Listen, anybody who has the pencil-thin beard, you know they're bad.
I have to say, the mantra for this episode was clearly spelled out from the get-go in terms of, you know, a look at their future selves, and Gert is dead, so you can probably figure out something, fix it, you know, and then when time travel is revealed to be the thing, it's not a huge surprise. The fact that they ask these characters to play 3 versions of themselves, the kind of contemporaneous season 3, the prior to episode 1, and then the 2028 versions, obviously not huge differences amongst the performances, but to see Renzi Feliz as just, you know, full-on villainous Alex Wilder, that was a delight. Who would have thought when we were first introduced to Chase Stein that he would have become, I was going to say, Pete, a hero of sorts, but a hero indeed, the hero we need to fight evil Alex Wilder.
When you consider that no Marvel show past Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has gone more than 3 seasons, to get to this number is, you know, with distinction. And whereas you were saying you think this is the best Runaways episode of all time, I think it's a good one. It succeeds, and it's got a special place, obviously, as the Now series finale, which was not completely scripted that way, although with some idea of it. It's a love letter to the pilot, and I think the pilot remains their strongest episode just in the way it pulled me in. I think it pulled an audience in that maybe wasn't necessarily there from the graphic novel, but was there on the interesting premise and the way that they sold it. So to see the growth in the characters, yes, and to see Renzi play Alex differently, to finally get future Chase, although we're going to talk about the distinctions between the 3 different Chases, which are a little confusing, particularly the way that future Chase has been depicted before, which looks like Chase in the middle, but we'll get there. I enjoyed Evil Alex. You don't like Evil Alex. Mission accomplished.
Well, I mean, I don't like him in that he's the villain. I thought that the presentation of him was delicious.
That's what I mean. You're not meant to like him. There's nothing redeeming there, even when they bring him back under the auspices of, all right, we're gonna do this. He's already said that's suicide, so it's telecast that he's gonna be up to no good.
And then add to it the return, while not surprising, the return effectively presented nonetheless of Morgan Le Fay. I think this was a good way to both kill her off at the end of last episode and then kill her off at the end of this episode. Pete, in another place, in another time, this would have been a really awesome 2-hour finale, 309, 310 together, just to really hammer home the fact that we're kind of doing a Back to the Future 2 in this episode. But you know, this a really fun way to tie things up. You mentioned the pilot episode being super effective. In a certain sense, in a storytelling sense, this is kind of pilot part 2, in that we go back to that day. We go back to those earliest characters. And again, for a bookending of the series, this was fun. This was easy to follow. This was action-packed. But above all else, it was character-driven.
Think about Elizabeth Hurley appearing in the later stages, some of it previously shot footage, some of it a little different, in what wound up being the series finale for a show with a fairly large cast, and how, you know, this proper British woman might feel presumptuous attempting to anchor that as a heavy. That's why I think Evil Alex works primarily as the villain in this episode. I mean, we had speculated at the end of 309, if she's gone, you know, what's the antagonist for the series finale for 310, and, you know, that they would potentially return to the time travel thing. I mean, again, the title kind of gives it away. But here we are.
Well, I think she gets to be both the big bad and she gets to be the midpoint bad, if you will. I mean, we know the audience, and then indeed the characters, the later characters that have time traveled back, they know how to defeat her. We know how she gets defeated. It's said at one point, don't worry, we win. Like, Gert, stay here. There's literally nothing to worry about. We are going to win. So to see that interplay of an ending that we knew, and we're not wildly changing that aside from Gert living, that was just a really novel way to do it, where she remained the big bad, but not the big bad of this episode.
Let's talk some theories, Matt. Time travel all over the place here, but not the time travel storyline teased, the one about preventing calamity in future LA. And we've got three interesting timelines here that notably get checked, not the present, although we can extrapolate the present because of the 3 years. But we begin in 2028. Okay. 5 years earlier, Matt, is 2023, you know, the year that Marvel, as far as the cinematic universe, has now shifted to post Infinity War Endgame. And then we've got 2022, 3 years earlier, being Gert's death in 2018.
So, well, I guess many, many thoughts. First of all, the fact that they have a time point, I guess indeed too, but the fact that they take things to that point, which is presumably after Endgame, it is a neat way to sidestep, you know, how does this fit into the larger picture? Because, Pete, you know, here we are with, you know, when we're done with this podcast, we will have but 13 episodes left for Marvel TV, asterisk Hellstrom. We'll see if that gets made. But, you know, the notion of these Marvel TV shows not really fitting into the MCU, I think that's a bit of language I've come to accept, that it's Jeff Loeb calls it the MCU. It's not really. But this episode is a way to sidestep all that and say, look, here we are, you know, after Endgame, and the kids are still here as 20-somethings. That's a novel way to do it. Pete, am I correct in saying that when they're referring to the new Star Wars hotel, is that 2023 as well?
No, I think it's 2021 when it opens.
Well, I know it opens in 2021. I had a moment of...
Oh, when they're making the reference, it's 2022.
Okay, then you know what, Pete? That makes it okay, because I had just this nerd rage moment where I was saying, in 2028, it won't be new. It will have been open for all these years, you know.
And oh, that's the new one. That's the one with holographic workers.
Ah, yeah. Pete, that's a good workaround there. See, it is just saved by one line sometimes. But... yeah, the let me put it this way, Pete. As somebody who has a Disney World trip planned in 2020 with family, and then we're looking to hit up the Star Wars Hotel probably sooner than my finances should allow for, but I'm prepared for it anyway. I love me some synergy, okay? I was watching a Disney documentary today on the 80s and 90s and, you know, animation and all that. That said, I had my eyes rolling a little bit where it's like, hey, bosses the new Star Wars hotel, or maybe a cruise. Like, oh, that was just a tad too much. I understand they want to be cute. I understand I understand it's all in the family, but that was somehow a bit too much for me.
This package that Chase was supposed to receive from his father bearing the name Victor, but not being the Victor who gave him the scar here. Oh, but that's not relevant. And then the bit at the end with Mancha, Mancha's full name from the comics, Bat Victor Mancha. They were planning kind of big here at the end, and unfortunately we're never going to get this payoff.
So you sent me an article from Entertainment Weekly, which I will hopefully link in the show notes. I'm gonna make a note to do that right now. That article makes a lot of hay over the series finale cliffhanger. And that's not how I took it. I think, Pete, because we've said goodbye to 5 Marvel Netflix, to Agent Carter, okay, maybe asterisk for Agent Carter. We've said goodbye to Inhumans. We've said goodbye to all these Marvel TV shows where, you know, there's a phrase for it. Jeff Loeb has used it. The end to be continued. And, or the end for now. And I think that that's tied into the genre of comic book TV and movies, where there's always going to be a little bit of an adventure continues kind of thing. So the fact that there was potential room for another story, that did not necessarily set off flags in terms of, oh, that's unresolved. I think it's a little bit of hyperbole for Entertainment Weekly, the no longer weekly magazine, to call it, you know, cliffhanger. It's, Pete, an adventure that we're not going to see with this cast on Hulu next year. It's an adventure that we may never see, but, you know, it's the end for now.
It's not to the level of an Agent Carter, where there's a whodunit at the very end that affects how you see the characters moving forward, but that they laid the seeds for a future storyline to possibly pick up. Okay, this introduction of, Mancha as a concept, that evil Alex is floating around, that he's looking to do bad things, would have been interesting. I would love to sit Savage and Schwartz down and pick their brains. Okay, you got renewed for season 4 in an alternate universe. You had killed some of the parents off. I think one of the most interesting aspects, and again, there's a lot to juggle in this finale that the runtime felt a little short for, that the parents never get a bow. We see them. I'd really have to, you know, line them up comparatively to see, you know, how much new we get. Obviously, them reacting to the death of future Chase is them, but, you know, they never really get a ceremonious and off they went. I'd even love to know, like, how much in the editing bay they had to know when they were deep in post about the decision. They likely didn't lock the show, and then the decision came. Okay, you guys, unfortunately, you've been canceled. You're not being brought back. Because the way they go off to brunch, and as you say, it's to be continued, maybe until the thing doesn't happen, and the way that the camera fades out and everything, that does not come off like a season finale.
I wonder how much of that is Schwartz and Savage and how much of that is the way Marvel TV gets done. I don't mean to overly hammer on Jeff Loeb and company, but, you know, I mean, Pete, I'm sitting here, as you're talking, I'm looking on the Hollywood Reporter to try and find the Schwartz and Savage article that I've referenced in the past. I found it. I'll link to that as well. But, you know, they have a certain perspective, you know, come early fall about the future of their careers and whatnot. Around the same time, Jeff Loeb's, you know, Jeff Loeb's mantra was, you know, the future is bright. The best Marvel TV shows have yet to be made. Everything still is coming. There's no problem. There's never a problem. There's never any whatever. And, you know, within 6 weeks, it all disappears. So how much was Schwartz and Savage saying, hey, when we're breaking the season before scripts are even solidified, we want to start to put some maybe the end in there? And how much is Marvel TV, whether it's Jeff Lowe personally or just Marvel TV, other bosses, Marvel TV corporate culture, saying, no, 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 we never admit defeat. We never admit that this could be the end. We can't. It's always to be continued. Wrap this story up, but we need to have season four seeds ready to go because that's how we do it. I sense maybe it's more Marvel TV than it is Schwartz and Savage, particularly given that I think they were looking to move on when Runaways was done, kind of, you know, mutually, not, oh man, Jeff, where's our next, you know, Marvel TV show? So I don't know. I just feel like maybe the show, these 33 episodes, had a bit of a disservice by not having, as you said, Pete, that bow. I mean, to think all the ups and downs we've had with the parents, the actors have always been really entertaining. And the fact that we don't get them, even the surviving ones, them standing there watching their children, now somehow grown up, go off to brunch together. Like, one little scene that would have been like, oh, and there's the bow for the parents, even though this one is dead and that one's not there, etc.
I've said before that I think what this show does well is one of, if not the best depictions of modern day kids, ironically, with a time traveling future finale. And let's remember too, this is a kid's finale. It's the younger cast's finale. It's not the finale of the older generation of actors, many, many of them seasoned veterans like James Marsters. And, you know, it's so much to attempt to juggle within that. And that's why I think the love letter to the pilot largely works. And then you have it baked in with the way that the story rounded back out with the end of the Morgan business. So it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, you definitely get, they had to have the sense with all these other Marvel shows being closed. Cloak and Dagger was shuttered as they were finishing up. You know, the one that did the big crossover with them that had only been rumored for 2 years and was, well, maybe next time you come over to our show. So it is the business, and it is a casualty of the business. But when I think back at this show, it's not the, you know, be upset because it's over. It's smile because you got it. And again, you match that 3-season, you know, runner-up length that Daredevil got, that Jessica Jones got. Runaways stands with those two other shows as the second longest tenured Marvel Cinematic Universe Marvel TV shows.
Certainly by season, maybe fourth place if you count episodes, with Daredevil and Jessica Jones having 39 episodes. Or, you know what, Pete, if you want to have them tie for second and give third place to Runaways. But I digress. It's been quite...
That says something, though.
It does. It does. And I mean, particularly in the last couple of days, Pete, I went back and I looked at the Runaways entry on Wikipedia, much of which was written in the early genesis of the show, you know, like when it was picked up, and quotes, you know, like, this is a brand new partner and the Hulu audience is our audience and it's going to be dynamic and all that. And maybe not all of that has come to pass, particularly in the last 3 years since the show was first conceived, you know, the rise of Disney Plus and all of that. And I would also argue, you know, Pete, if I was working at Hulu and if I had to pay my mortgage based on a Hulu paycheck, I would be a little nervous just based on what the future of that company might be relative to other Disney offerings. But, you know, as you said, Pete, we're not going to look back and say, oh, here's what it could have been. 3 seasons, 33 episodes, rewarding character moments, and sticking the landing for a series finale. That's pretty darn good.
I mentioned the parents before. It's interesting that Jeffrey Wilder gets checked as having a new wife, a new life, and nothing to hide except himself, because he doesn't appear in that future timeline. None of the parents appear in the future timelines, only in the past.
That's probably smart production-wise. I think that they were probably splitting the difference between the actor ages and the character 2019 ages and how they're supposed to look in 2028. And it's probably, you know, to sit and go, oh, change her hair a little bit, or him, give him facial hair. That's enough. I mean, we're not going to sit and go, well, actually, if he's 32, or, oh, he would have put on weight, or something like that. To now not have the parents where they need to be aged up another 10 years. And what does that look like in terms of wrinkles or hair color and makeup? And it's probably just easiest to say, nope, we're not even going to address that. We'll keep them looking 2019 fresh in the 2019 portions of the story.
The Mancha stuff, said before, the Victor there is Victor Mancha. This connected to the comics. Victor Mancha was the son of Ultron. So the idea that Alex in the intermediate time frame is using the abstract and eventually an AI similar to Ultron gets created in 2022. I like the way that this kind of fits in as a bookend, even with what's gone on in the jump to 2023 in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, it's a nice, it ends on a nice note. Again, I'm not gonna be in a tizzy, you know, unresolved cliffhanger. It's where the story would/will go, whether it gets made or not, which I think is kind of the distinction. Sometimes, you know, if you think back to The Wizard of Oz, discounting the Return to Oz movie, which is still frightening and surreal and strange, you know, when Dorothy wakes up, what more story is there really? There really, really isn't. It's the end, period, you know, at least from the movie end. I know there's more books, etc. You know, for many TV shows, not just in the comic book genre, you know, the characters move on. The last episode of MASH, Hawkeye leaves. Okay, all their lives continue. I know, Pete, because there was a middlingly successful spinoff called After MASH that ran for 2 seasons. Like, all these characters move on in life. It's, you know, in the life of fiction, whatever it might be. And I like it that it's not just let's go out to brunch. It's let's go out to brunch. But is there more? Well, you'll never know. There's a little bit of an itch there that might never get scratched, Pete. But it's nice because guess what? It's kind of authentic to real life. Life does continue.
I got to ding them. I did ding them before a little bit because the intermediary Chase has a heavier beard than the further future Chase. But on further thought, it kind of squares with what we've seen of future Chase before. So perhaps those messages sent back via the time TV we saw in the first 2 seasons happen before this Chase goes back in time. And it all strangely works. We can sit here and pick apart things that are incongruous, but if you follow them to their natural conclusion, it's fairly squared off.
Pete, I know soon it will be Fred time in this podcast, but we can't flip to Fred without talking about one of the great podcasting memories I have of the series, and that was Fred discussing the name Eiffel and it not necessarily ringing immediately to him as being a somewhat kind of tongue-in-cheek, I don't know, West Coast, super trendy, ultra trendy female name. And indeed, Pete, I could not have been smiling more when Eiffel got the shout out in this episode. If nothing else, it gives us a little extra bonding with Fred.
Look at it this way, Matt. There were 3 Star Wars hotel shout-outs. There were 2 Eiffel shout-outs, okay? So anytime you're right there with Star Wars, that makes a lot of sense. And Eiffel being the cheerleading captain, kind of bullied and, you know, Gert and gave Molly a hard time and was was on and off with Chase, really kind of a plot construction of that first season. But the line sexting Eiffel and Fred's subsequent investigation of that definitely yielded some podcast hilarity.
Pete, in my headcanon, here's what happened. Schwartz and Savage themselves have listened to the podcast. They have chuckled to themselves. Of course, they're not going to reach out. They are mighty showrunners. We are but podcasters. But they enjoyed it so much that they said, you know what, in that finale, we got to help out those Fantastic Geek boys. We got to help out that crazy Fred character. We have to mention Eiffel not once, but twice. With that, Pete, let's officially hear from Fred.
Hello, Matt and Pete, and all listeners to Fantastic Geek. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Marvel's Runaways Season 3, Episode 10, the season and series finale. Yeah, I did it. Actually, you are always speedy guys, and I cannot keep up with you, especially having every other day a podcast. But due to the holiday season, I did manage to do my audio feedback for all 10 episodes of Runaways, and in between some Mandalorian and stuff for other podcasts. And even due to you, start watching Star Wars Rebels and start Cloak and Dagger, and also listen to your podcasts about those shows, even going back to 2015 and 18 for that. Nice cheap episode, using all kinds of footage from earlier episodes, although sometimes they do use some footage taken from other angles. After sci-fi, genre, magic, we now also get time travel. I'm a little ambivalent about that. It was partly nice to see how they evolved in the next few years, but then going even back to earlier periods, and we even have a shot with three Alexes at the same time. I don't know. And then the typical time travel trope, she shouldn't meet yourself, you could influence the timeline, etc., etc. And of course they all break that. On the other hand, it gives nice scenes with double roles, and as the biggest Orphan Black fan in the world, you know I do like double roles. Question, is somewhere told how Chase got his scar by a Victor? I don't know if Victor is his dad, but that's not clear. Or is that the scar he gets at the end? So in 2022, and when he then disappears back to the future, he's not dead. But he didn't get those injuries by a Victor. He did get those injuries by Morgan Le Fay with this glass object again. They really should have moved that thing away. That would resolve everything. Gert not dead, Chase not dead. And if we see one of the last scenes, we see that these glass splinters go through his chest and not through his neck. Future Alex was also saying something about a scar in the school bus. But that didn't get a follow-up either. So, what is it about this scar in his neck? Of course I have to say something about the new Star Wars hotel where they want to put Alex in, as a cross-reference to The Mandalorian. If I don't, Pete will say, oh, I'm amazed Fred didn't say anything about the cross-reference with The Mandalorian. So, Pete, now I did. As Chase points out, there are two important forces in life. The first is love, and the second is time. And you surely have both. Love for podcasting, and time to do almost 3 podcasts a week in 2019. Big, big compliments, guys.
The two most powerful forces in life are invisible. The first is love. The second is time.
Oh, Fred, putting a lump in my throat here. Thank you very much.
Yes, certainly kind words, particularly here at the end of the run for Runaways. Pete, making me wistful. To be a bit more focused on the episode itself, Fred mentioning something that we did not. The show really does do a great job of doubling up the roles. Some of them fancy effect shots that don't look fancy. For example, I know there's a scene where Nico is talking to what is clearly the double actress, and then the camera, uncut, quote-unquote, and, you know, I'm sure it's using some fancy effects here, spins around, and it's the same actress. So just things like that where they just kind of, they planned to do some razzle-dazzle, some low-key razzle-dazzle, and the show really, really doing a nice job there. And Pete Fred also mentioning the Star Wars Hotel. I can't wait to hit up the Galactic Star Cruiser. Maybe we go on some space adventures with Fred.
Yeah, let's make that happen in 2021. The Victor thing, the scar, they are connected, we can assume. So while they did not explicitly state where the scar comes from, it doesn't come from Victor Stein. It comes from another Victor. So how many Victors can there be? It's got to be Victor Mancha, a.k.a. Mancha, here at the end of the episode. So the connection there, a little difficult to follow, but just want to make that clear for Fred. So he's clear.
Pete, what other feedback do you have?
We have an Apple Podcast review from ATL Word Finder. The headline is Fantastic Geek is the Marvel TV podcast, 5 stars. And it reads, I'm just now starting the 3rd season of Runaways, but I resist the urge to binge just to give myself a chance to hear Matt and Pete recap the show I just watched. Their podcasts are always well-structured, informative, and imbued with humanity and love for the shows / source material. It's been a pleasure to experience every Marvel TV show with them, starting, for me, with the sadly defunct Agent Carter. Our intrepid Netflix heroes have been cut down in their prime, but 1 season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. remains. Then we all blaze new trails with the upcoming Disney Plus material. Excelsior to all.
Well, Pete, another little lump in my throat there, because in this age where so many of these shows are bingeable, new, let alone, hey, I discovered it, you know, retroactively, now I can still binge Agent Carter on Disney Plus, new for the first time, that kind of thing, you know, new to me, new to whoever for the first time. The notion that that listener and others are supplementing the viewing experience with the podcast blow by blow, I think that that captures what we try and do, which is, whether it's bingeable or not, stop and have the discussion about every episode, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter episodes, whatever it might be. And just my deepest thanks there to the reviewer for such kind words.
You know, this, as we're dropping this episode after the new year in 2020 and all 3 seasons of Runaways now available on Disney Plus, I think it's going to bring over a new audience. Certainly look forward to people checking out their show, our show, and in 2020, Fantastic Geek going to continue just as always. May not hit, probably not going to hit 185 podcasts like we did last year. So it might be the first year in all 6 we've been around that we don't set a new record as far as content. But when you consider we'll be back with God Friend and Me very soon, we got Star Trek Picard coming, Star Trek Discovery shortly after that, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to finish up, you know, slated for summer. Who knows exactly when that'll start? Last year it started in May. Looking forward. And then, you know, we got Mandalorian, we've got Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and then what other kind of new trouble we can get into.
Well, Pete, though we will be podcasting less episodes in 2020, I know we do have some plans for a little bit more activity over on Patreon. In fact, I'm looking at 4 things in the next 4 months that maybe we won't discuss here, but I will say thank you to the support of everyone who's gone to patreon.com/fantasticgeek. All your support all season long of Runaways, all year long for Fantastic Geek. And Pete, I can't wait to dive into what we have planned on Patreon in 2020.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content that Matt is alluding to right there. There's all sorts of levels, but more importantly, you help us with bandwidth. You help us with the tremendous cost of keeping our entire backlog on fantasticgeek.com, something that we have so much stuff we can't keep it all on Apple Podcasts, despite having 19 different feeds there. In particular, the Pop Culture Podcast feed was so busy in 2019, it ate its tail. So thanks again to everybody who can contribute. If you can't contribute monetarily, you can always go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating, takes a second, leave us a review, takes a little bit more, all helpful to what we do.
Pete, with goodies planned on Patreon, let's not forget, though, that there is a freebie goodie that's talking to you on Twitter. How can people do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKelaar, KetelaaR, 11,007 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with a PH, all one word, like it today.
Well, Pete, the end for now. The Runaways discussion, still a little to be continued. We'll be talking about the Runaways Season 3, indeed series wrap, this upcoming Saturday, January 4th. So excited to talk about that, to get together with the gang one more time. With that, Pete, though, time to say adios to this season finale episode. And I will do just that and give you, Pete, the final word.
There is beauty in simplicity. So far, I guess that's why I didn't notice that police car. We're doing 90 in my mom's new Porsche. And to make this long story short, when the cop pulled me over.